So welcome. You're listening to WTUL News and Views. Can we get a hello from Meredith?
Hello, everybody.
And Emma.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So we're here today to talk a little bit about on-campus binge drinking. It's been on the rise, according to the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. 1,825 college students died from unintended consequences in 2002, and since then, alcohol-related deaths on U.S. campuses has increased by 6%. We're going to be dedicating our session today to the alcohol-related student deaths that took place this fall. So Meredith Harris has been counseling students from New Orleans campuses, and she also has a personal connection. She lost her brother to a drug overdose in 1981. She is proposing a sober living residence hall that would be named in Colin McQuaig Wheeler's memory. So, Meredith, can you give us a little background about what's going on for you this week?
Well, actually, first of all, my brother not only died of an overdose, he committed suicide while high on cocaine in 1981. I've been in private practice since 2003, and Tulane has been a very loyal sort of referral resource to me, and I've worked with many, many students, many who are coming back from a medical leave of absence, many are being discharged from local inpatient hospitals, many who are coming into town or to college either for the first time as freshmen or return students after going to rehab or intensive outpatient programs. Especially with the last 17 deaths at Tulane since August. I know only 7 have been reported, but there have been 17. There have been suicides, a murder. There's also been a lot of substance abuse, just related deaths. And I'm pretty sure that all of the suicides also involved alcohol or drugs. Our students are dying. And unfortunately, quite a few of the students have been clients of mine. And it just seems like it's increasing, increasing, increasing. I know for a fact that drugs get delivered to campus from Holly Grove to all campuses. I'm tired of seeing my clients struggle. Also, we have so many clients that are students that come from very sheltered families. Mm-hmm. And they come to New Orleans. And New Orleans is a grand place. And it's magical in many ways. And I know for myself, you know, when I went off to college, I dropped out after the first semester because of all the freedom. I also am a recovering cocaine addict. And I shouldn't be alive right now. But a lot of our students come from wealthy, sheltered families, hometowns. And then they're thrown into these dorms. And the dorms are filled with alcohol and drugs. You all have RAs, but half of them are drinking or drugging themselves. Several of the universities claim they have sober dorms. No, they're not. They may be the gifted students, the ones that get straight A's. And they say, okay, we're committed to not smoking, not drinking, not drugging, but who's monitoring? These children are raising each other. For instance, I went to boarding school, and it was us that raised each other. And let me tell you, a bunch of 15-year-olds don't really know what's going on. And, I have several students that are coming in from being in inpatient or intensive outpatient or have struggled with drugs. They're trying to be sober. But the universities impose that they live in the dorms. And there's just too much peer pressure. I have several clients that want to be sober, but how are they going to fit in? How are they going to make friends? One of my clients, a wonderful girl, She should have graduated 4 years ago, but because she's had to go to inpatient treatment 3 times, 4 medical leaves of absence, came in with a 4.0, will be graduating hopefully this semester with a 2.6, if that. She has to fly back home, and she lives in the West. I don't want to disclose too much. She has to fly back home every month to see a psychiatrist, because there's no psychiatrist here that'll take her insurance. It's just really a shame. And right now it's called what we call in the community, in the 12-step community, hurricane season. It's Mardi Gras, Jazz Fest, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving. It's all about drinking. It's all about drugging. And for those of us that we don't want to die and feel miserable every day, we want to live and be happy. But it's kind of depressing when everything in this society in New Orleans, I mean, who else has a zoo that serves alcohol? Who else serves drinks at Little League? It's almost like if you don't drink, you don't belong. And, you know, I have nothing against people who drink. I have nothing against people who drug. I just don't have the luxury to drug. And there's a lot of students that want to do well. However, they feel like they can't belong. You know, if somebody says, let's go out, it's to the boot. It's wherever. And if that person says they don't drink, they don't go out.
So you, I had gotten on the Facebook page for the Colin McQuaig Wheeler Memorial site.
Yes.
And there was a video where you had gotten together with students, parents of students, and other professionals to discuss a response, a proactive response to this, what you call hurricane season of distress for college students. Can you describe that experience getting together with, you know, different stakeholders in this issue?
It was beautiful. It was a Saturday morning at 10. Where most students are either doing the Walk of Shame down Broadway or passed out or asleep. And several dedicated clients and community members that I've worked with, that I've had interaction with, all came together. We invited people from the dean's offices of Tulane, Xavier, Loyola, and everybody had something else to do, like a tennis match, going to the basketball game, to I have a lunch date. But these people got together, and we weren't planning on filming it. And it's a very raw, raw film. And we said, what the hell, why not film it? And everyone shared their strength, hope, and experience, and desire for a new way of life. And how universities could respond differently to the needs of individuals. You know, not everybody needs to live in a sober dorm. There are people here with mental health issues. There are people here with substance abuse issues. There are people here with Asperger's. There are people here with many, many different diagnoses. And even if it's just low self-esteem, and there's just not enough support. You guys try. The health center tries very, very hard. I know how hard Tulane, for instance, has been working on this. But it's not enough. And there's only so few of us therapists out there. And since Katrina, a lot of therapists and doctors have stopped taking insurance because of supply and demand, which truly is unethical and unfair. However, this is just one option. This will be a for-profit. However, the benefits, I used to be a concert promoter in Port Chester, New York. I'm going back to concert promoting, and as well as continue to see my clients. But I'm going to have several benefits to go for scholarship living. and involved in this is hopefully a doctoral program and interns so we can reach the children. The center, the Colin McQuaig Wheeler Sober Living House, during the daytime, will be open to any registered student of any age, of any color, of any economic status. We will have children of alcoholics meetings. We will have cancer survivors meetings. We'll have transgender meetings, and so on. And but we will also do outreach to the schools and to the churches and just to any community that's willing to receive the help that we want to give.
Can you describe the project that you name that you gave it is The Well, Where Empathy Lives Life. Can you describe where you brought that name from?
That actually was from a past client of mine, and she gave me permission to use it. And what was originally proposed was The Well was going to be, Where Empathy Lives Life, was going to be an entire facility where nobody would be denied any services, especially if you have Medicaid or Medicare. A lot of Medicaid, Medicare people of any age are denied services because Medicaid, Medicare often doesn't pay well or often doesn't pay at all. And so we were thinking of doing a huge holistic project, and we still are, probably in Mid-City, probably behind the Rouses, purchasing some of the old warehouses, where we'll have all sorts of alternative therapies. We'll have some psychiatrists there, but holistic psychiatrists as well. We'll have massage therapists. We'll have yoga. We'll have Pilates. We will have swim therapy. The elderly will have a place to come and sit. So if you have insurance, that's wonderful. If you don't, you're still welcome to our services. I tell all of my people that I'd like to have work underneath me, that you can work underneath me, make your money, but if you ever deny anyone anything, take a hike. I didn't get into social work to make money. I got in it to give it back and to help the many other people to not have to go through what I went through, what my brother went through, what millions of people go through. And a lot of people think if you're rich, you don't have problems. It's actually the opposite. The wealthier you are, the sicker you are. The more intelligent you are, the sicker you are. It's in our head. And the smarter you are, the more access you have, the more at risk you are.
So we have another voice in the studio that is doing a lot of work on, including safe spaces and doing some work on mental health and substance use. So Emma is a Tulane student and also a member of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. They're a group that has done phone banking for more national drug policy issues. They also hosted an event this November that was a video about harm reduction using drugs in a safer way. And I wanted to welcome Emma to the studio.
Thank you. So that event that you were talking about in November was called Play Safe. It's a documentary film about Eddie Einbinder's experience going around the nation and interviewing real people using real substances, everything from alcohol to tobacco to heroin to what we know as Special K. And what his mission was by doing that is providing a responsible education about drug use. We can no longer say in the 21st century, in 2015, that, you know, just say no policy works. Abstinence only does not work, and we need to start taking a real, responsible, healthy, informed conversation about drugs and alcohol use and bringing it to students so that they can make healthy and informed decisions. Because right now, by either sliding it under the table or, even worse, by penalizing students and also having them go through these programs, which, as we know here, called Basics, that students really treat us as a joke because it's not tailored to the individual. So what I'm really interested in through SSDP is kind of changing these policies that we recognize, especially on Tulane campus, that do more harm than good. And they do more harm than good because they're not actually addressing that students are going to use, and how do they use healthy? How do they stay safe? How do they not end up, you know, like Melissa's brother and like all of the other, you know, traumatic students that we've had here on campus? So I would really love to disentangle this, like, mental health from substance use on campus from Melissa's perspective, because I certainly struggled with my mental health. I also took a leave of absence my sophomore year. I certainly found the pressures to do drugs and alcohol in my first freshman and sophomore years of on campus. For sure, I felt that pressure. And it took me a lot of time in therapy and also I had the luxury to live in this honors dorm, like she said, where it's like for the gifted students. But I still feel like Tulane University made it really hard for me to come back and really live the kind of life that I wanted to live, supported by other students who wanted to, you know, take a proactive approach to their life and not kind of fall into the same patterns that we're taught to bring up with.
Has there been, I remember after the discussion for the Play Safe documentary, there was this need identified for some better university-led grief counseling and also like vigils maybe or memorial events. And did your student group meet with any kind of university-supported events? Or
I know that SSDP directly was not involved in enough. I know that we did during one of our group meetings, we had a moment of silence for one of the students who passed away in November. His name is Benjamin Burlock, and he lost his life on November 9th. But I know that there are so many other amazing social outreach services here on campus that are doing that. A lot of, we have the Office of Multicultural Affairs who have hosted a lot of vigils, but not with a direct link to drug use and alcohol use on campus. They do with amazing like trans and LGBTQ violence victims, and they've had vigils for them. But that's something I've been personally very interested in on my own life, because I've lost someone to cancer while I was at Tulane. So I'm still looking, really honestly, for a good grief like a grief support group. I know also the Hillel was trying to do that, but it costs too much. And like Melissa was saying, you know, with all these groups, all these therapists have to stop taking insurance. How are students who are low income, who are working, who are in school, actually able to access these really fundamental and, I believe, life-saving services? So I certainly see a gap at Tulane.
Yeah. You did mention that you wanted to disentangle a little mm-hmm. from the, like, substance use and mental health
yeah.
issues. Did we want to come in and discuss that a little bit, Meredith?
Sure. I think they're very much attached with one another. But they both need to be addressed.
Yeah.
Okay? Some people with mental health issues may use substances but not abuse it. Okay? And you know, there's this huge controversy about marijuana, medical maintenance, what have you. And many, many, many people that I work with, marijuana has helped. It helps them to sleep. It helps them to calm down. But they don't abuse it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the last time I checked, the brain was attached to the body. However, hospitals, you know, a lot of people, insurance companies, forget about that. So one can have diabetes and get all the treatment they can, but one can have depression and it's not supported. It's hard to disentangle them totally, but there are two separate things to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody is truly abusing substances, you have to get that under control before you can deal with the mental health. You have to get somebody to be sober. You know, it's like one of my clients said when she was at Tulane years ago. She was on 15 different medications. Come to find out after a year of sobriety, she never had any of the diagnoses. She was diagnosed borderline, bipolar, depression, anxiety. Come to find out, she was just a hurt little girl, mm-hmm. struggling with anorexia. And when she had a year of sobriety, she didn't need any medicine. Now, she's actually a director of a treatment facility in Florida. And I hope to bring her in on this project. But yes, substance abuse and mental health are two separate issues. However, they very much go hand in hand. I mean, let me say this. If I don't have health insurance and I've got schizophrenia, you're damn right I'm going to drink a 40-ounce, mm-hmm. and I'm going to smoke some crack to get those voices to stop. Do I have a right to feel okay, normal, silence, peace? Absolutely. But for many of us, we can't get that without substances. And also, Emma, I'd be more than happy to start a grief group for you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. I just want to mention we're WTUL New Orleans, 91.5. You're listening to WTUL News and Views. I'm in the studio with Meredith Harris, who is a counselor and addictions therapist here in New Orleans, and she serves a lot of the college community. We also have Joe Crown. Can you say hi, Joe?
How you doing over there, Nora?
Doing pretty well. Joe Crown is a local pianist. He's going to be yes. playing at the Howlin' Wolf on Thursday for the event to raise public awareness about these issues and to raise funds for the Colin McQuaig Wheeler Sober Living House. We're also joined with Emma, who is from the Students for Sensible Drug Policy and is a Tulane student. So if you just joined in, we'll have the earlier part of this episode available on our Tumblr. Just check back around 9:30. And if you are missing your regularly scheduled counterspin, please visit fair.org, FAIR.org. We'll be back with our weekly coverage of counterspin next Monday. So, Joe, can you give us a little background on your interest in what we're talking about today are the alcohol-related deaths on campuses?
Well, my background, my interest in this is that Meredith, first of all, is a personal friend of mine. And secondly, I have a daughter that just made it through college. And that whole generation of kids that are in her age group, I mean, we have a lot of nieces and nephews that are either in or just getting through school that have, all of them have pretty much survived it unscathed, but the whole reality of just being a parent and having a kid go through college and you send them away to a school and your information about what's going on in their lives is very filtered, and it's a very scary sort of a thing. And the last thing I would ever want to have happen is to get that call. And what I mean by that call, that there is a crisis involving your kid, whether it be a death or, you know, an overdose or some sort of law problem, legal problems with arrests for drugs or alcohol. You know, I was fortunate enough to get with my daughter to not have that, but my wife and I definitely had a lot of anxiety over that. And so do all of our brothers and sisters that have had kids in that sort of age group. I have one niece that had some real bad issues with anorexia and had some real serious issues, and she had to take some time out and deal with some things with that. And I just think the whole thing is a pretty good cause, and I think it really needs some awareness. I mean, I turned on the TV this morning, and up in Connecticut, there's Wesleyan University that had 11 overdoses from ecstasy. Yeah, I mean, it's just every day you turn on the television or open the newspaper, you know, turn on any sort of news source, there's you know, some sort of accidental or something or other. I mean, a few weeks ago, there was a murder-suicide on campus. It's just, you know, I think it's a serious problem that just needs some more attention. And, you know, just having a child and nieces and nephews that have dealt with this and have gone through this and have had friends that have had some serious issues, and I just think it's worth, you know, being involved with this. So
I want to take this opportunity to thank you so much for your personal stories, to Joe, Meredith, and also to Emma. A lot of the time, the risks associated with substance use and mental health issues are mostly associated with the stigma around those conditions. And I want to thank everybody for being so open and so brave to share, because increasingly we're seeing these issues impact all of us in very personal ways. And the experiences can be very different. There's never like one way, one story. There's many stories. So thank you so much for sharing. I wanted to take a step back and again describe the Sober Living Housing Project. So this is in response to our local substance abuse issues and mental health issues not being supported well enough on campus, and there being a real need for a space for students to go with other like-minded students. So we had a couple of questions. I'm going to let Emma, this was from her notes from the Students for Sensible Drug Policy meeting yesterday.
So Melissa, Meredith. Sorry. Oh gosh, Meredith. So already when I've posted this on my social media page, I've gotten overwhelmingly positive responses from both students at Tulane and Loyola, and I hope that this sober living dorm will reach greater campuses. However, I want to get it right. If students who have already been found with possession, say on campus, a lot of what SSDB does advocates on behalf of students who are kind of going through the disciplinary process. So would this sober living dorm be entirely voluntary to sign up for, or would students be sent there if they have drug-related issues?
One of the things I'm proposing to UNO, Loyola, Xavier, and Tulane is for them to commit to one room each with three beds that would stay open, and they would pay for it for a calendar year, not academic year, calendar year. And those beds would be committed and open to their students. So let's say somebody's date raped. Let's say somebody has been Thamesed for the third or fourth time. Let's say somebody is struggling with simple anorexia. Somebody's struggling with cutting. It doesn't have to be substance abuse.
Okay.
They would be there. The only qualification is there will be drug testing there. And even if you're not abusing substances, let's say you're there for an emotional reason, you shouldn't really be abusing substances at that time. As you're going through therapy, we'll have individual group. We'll have lots of support. However, let's say it's a condition of a medical leave that you get treatment. There will be treatment there. I won't be registered as an inpatient, but right now the building's going through zoning to be a treatment facility. Until that happens, and in case it doesn't happen, you know, my investors have a big stake in this. It's going to be rolling as a bed and breakfast, especially through Jazz Fest. We hope to be up and running in August. I already have 5 or 6 students that would like to stay here. The minimum amount of stay is 3 months, but you can stay there the whole 4 years. You know, you can commit to a year. The one thing is, I have to think about all the other students that are staying there. They're choosing. Or they may be forced, okay, that if anyone brings drugs or alcohol onto the campus, they'll be asked to leave. And they can go to another inpatient or outpatient, or they can live somewhere else and still get the services on campus, on the campus that I'm proposing to buy. But I, for the whole welfare, it's also going to be available, so if you live there, that you can have animals, cats or dogs. I believe that animals really help mental health. And just as long as they're not like 300-pound dogs. You can have birds, but if they speak too loud, they have to go.
There's a weight limit, huh?
There's a weight limit.
Noise limit.
There's also going to be, hopefully, renovating a 3-car garage into a studio. So we'll have music therapy as well. There's also going to be gardening therapy. I have a horticulturist who has worked in the mental health field and will be there. We will also have a full running kitchen. And we will prepare any sort of meal. If it's kosher, it's kosher. If it's vegan, it's vegan. If it's meat and potatoes, you got it. Thank you.
Yeah. So we want to close out here in just a couple of minutes and dedicate our in-studio interview here with Joe Crown, Meredith Harris, and Emma from Students for Sensible Drug Policy to the alcohol-related student deaths that took place in fall of 2014. Did anybody have any last-minute questions or notes that they wanted to say?
Nora, hi. This is Janet, and I have one question for Meredith. What district is the property in, and have you received any support from your council member?
Actually, from Ms. Cantrell. She has been supportive. In fact, of all the people that I've invited or engaged in, she actually sent Anna from her office to actually meet with us. I've sent out emails to Mitch Landrieu. No response. And I know with his son, he probably should respond. But Ms. Cantrell's office has been very supportive, and we hope that we are able to get to the zoning, because the zoning right now in the city is very difficult. So a lot of change is going on. And, you know, in the area, it's off Britannia Street, off by St. Charles in the Lower Garden District. There's several apartments out there. So students are already living out there. People are living out there. And I hope the stigma of just people wanting to have a life of sobriety, emotional sobriety, physical sobriety, spiritual sobriety, will not be dismissed or negated. I mean, hell, they probably already rent to people who are getting drunk every night at the pub. So wouldn't it be nice to have some sober students living there? Mm-hmm. And I also want to add one more thing. This will also be open to high school students, too, because there is a huge epidemic of heroin abuse in our high schools. Thank you.
Thanks. Joe, before we stop off, you're going to be playing Thursday's public awareness event and fundraising event. Can you tell us about who you're playing with, where it's at, what time?
Okay, we're doing this benefit at the Howlin' Wolf this Thursday, the 26th. It's doors will open at 6 p.m. We've got three bands at night. The first band will be the John Papa Gros Band. For those of you that remember Papa Gros Funk, this is John's solo project. He will go on around 6:30. The next band will be my band that I play with every Sunday night at the Maple Leaf with Walter Wolfman Washington and Russell Batiste Jr. And then around 9:30, we'll have the Great Bonorama playing. So, fans of New Orleans music, you know, if you want to hear it, it'll be funky, it'll be horn blasting, and it'll be definitely a good time musically.
And cheap. It's only $15 online, $20 at the door.
Thank you. Did you have any last things to say, Emma?
Just one last thing. I want to say that Students for Sensible Drug Policy neither condones nor condemns drug use, but we recognize that the current drug policies do more harm than good. So we advocate for schools, not prisons.
Absolutely.
And I love that you have it open for high school students. I love be able to stay in school while also seeking treatment. And I definitely want to go to the Howlin' Wolf on Thursday.
Yay!
Yeah. I'll see you guys there.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. So I got together yesterday in preparation for this in-studio event with Emma and Meredith and Joe. I got together with Ariel, who's from the New Orleans Harm Reduction Network. The New Orleans Harm Reduction Network was founded in 2011 by a small group of syringe access providers, advocates, and drug users. Today, they are strengthened by a network of allies who challenge stigma faced by people who use drugs and advocate for change. They wanted to show some support from the outside community, and this is going to be the interview that we did yesterday. So thank you so much for coming in. And you can always go ahead and listen to our in-studio interviews on WTUL News and Views Tumblr. Anything else you wanted to say, Emma?
Just thank you guys so much for opening up this discussion, Nora and Meredith. It was such a pleasure meeting you. And I'm really looking forward to all these projects.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.